Hey, kids, we're a couple of annoyed grunt boys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast. I turned my camera on, I cut my fingers on the way, the waves slipping away. I turned my feelings on, you made me untouchable for life. That's right, we're the podcast that explores the American animated sitcom, The Simpsons, from seasons 11 and beyond, and the newest ones when they're available. Why do we do it like that? Well, an entity known as the Wheel of Random has trapped us and forced us to watch these shows in that fashion. And I say we because I'm one annoyed grunt boy named Steve. And with me, as always, is the other annoyed grunt boy,
Craig.
Hello, Craig. How you doing this week?
Just wonderful, Steve. How about you?
I am doing well. We're in the depths, I don't want to date this, but of a snowpocalypse in here in our region and throughout most of the country, I believe.
Yeah. They're all lucky like us.
That's right.
We all get to be snuggled in our beds watching reruns of The Simpsons. That's all we want to do when it's a snow day.
Exactly.
Do you have any like snow day rituals that you got to do?
I know it sounds really kind of corny, but I usually make myself a cup of hot chocolate. And then, you know, I always like to go for a walk in the snow because I like how quiet it is. And then usually I just sleep a lot. I like to get all cozy and then I just end up falling asleep. What about you, Craig?
It's more like going for the trek and walk outside like in the afternoon. And it's one of those things where I will allow myself to have like maybe early drink or early cocktail, which I'm not very much of an early cocktailer, which I might get into later, but it's also like the closest, I've probably said this before on a podcast, like the closest bar/restaurant, like watering hole is an Applebee's to my house. So it's like, it gives me the opportunity to like walk to an Applebee's and to like have a drink and like, it's a snow day. I could cheat or like go to the Taco Bell and have Taco Bell inside.
Right.
It's the adventure that's the important part. It's the journey, Steve, not the destination.
It's very true. I couldn't agree more. And I think that the journey on a snowy day is a lot of fun.
But you always kind of want to end it with like an adult beverage, right?
That's right. And that's why it takes us to our favorite segment, the Simpsons Beer Corner.
Now a little beer music to get in the mood.
Alrighty, Craig, what have you got for us this week?
It might be because of the weather we're in, but this applies to the episode. Look, we're going to Sundance. And when you think of like Sundance Film Festival, you're thinking of snow and mountains. And like, you know, really, that always reminds me of the holidays. And it's been such a long time since we've had the holidays, Steve. So I wanted to go back to that feeling. And that's why I went with New Belgium's Holiday Ale.
Oh boy.
It is a limited release, Steve, from a year ago. It's got flavors of cranberry and spice and everything nice. Oh, sorry, nice. We have 7.5% alcohol. There's no description. It's just a holiday ale. So I'm expecting cranberry and spice. I'm expecting this is probably what I want to be drinking when I'm watching some new Jim Jarmusch movie starring John C. Reilly, produced by Skinchalm. And as I pour it, it's just a nice deep amber, like a dark honey-looking color. This just smells of like a winter festive ale. Ooh, I do get the tones of like you're biting into a ginger snap. I think the aftertaste is very much the cranberry. It's a nice fruity aftertaste. But you get that nice Christmas spice. This is a very well-done holiday ale. And I just now miss my Christmas tree, Steve. I miss the stockings.
Yeah.
Should I just go put them back up while I drink this beer?
Yeah. Do you think that the cranberry flavor, would you say that it lingers?
If I'm going to be drinking a lot of these, I will probably turn into like a zombie.
Sure.
And that's all the cranberry songs we know.
That's right.
Steve, what do you got for us this week?
Like many people, I am experimenting with dipping my toe into sobriety. At least for a little while. And so I got myself a non-alcoholic beer, but it does relate to this episode because, one, we begin our episode at a big football game,
And those players, they're some athletes. So from Athletic Brewing Company, I've got a beer. This episode's also about independent film. And some of those movies, you know, they might have cheery titles, but they're kind of dark. One would say extra dark. So from Athletic Brewing Company, I have First Ride Extra Dark with Coffee Ale. It contains less than 0.5% alcohol. So a full-bodied brew featuring medium and dark coffee roasts. First Ride is a crisp and assertive sip of liquid motivation. It's a tribute to the dedication it takes to get through the day and to finish it strong. Rich, nutty, but still bright, is how they describe me, and drinkable all day or night. It contains caffeine. So I am very skeptical of non-alcoholic beer. However, the Athletic Brewing Company beer that I have tried in the past has been very good. So I'm curious to see how this goes. And fear not, true believers, I will be back with booze at some point, but for now, just taking a little break. Wow, it is very dark. Extra dark is truly what it is. It's got a nice creamy head. It looks like a stout.
Do you want me to pour some vodka in there for you?
Maybe, but save that for your pancakes.
Okay. Well, Steve's taking a sip of his NA beer. Going to town on that beer. Look at him go.
Huh.
Well, Steve, what's your verdict?
You know, it's good. I gotta say, it's not bad at all. It has like a very strong coffee taste, but it still tastes like a beer. It's like not the best coffee stout I've ever had, but it's also not the worst. It's probably like, I don't know, it's not like in the top 10 of my beers that I've ever had. But what I'm saying is it's a solid beer, you know, aside from the knowing that I'm not gonna get drunk. If you gave it to me, I don't know that I would immediately know that I was non-alcoholic, which I think is a testament to it. So, you know, so, it's good.
So you're saying that like maybe if like you're in a group and everyone else has alcohol and they're getting slightly drunker that and you were having this, you might get the placebo effect of getting drunk.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's good. Steve, I did put alcohol in that. Your beer.
Shut up. No, you didn't.
We might not always be here with the beer corner because of Steve's No Shave November or Dry January.
Right. Extra nut in January.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm drinking a beer on this day. I just felt, you know, it's a cozy, wintry, snowy day here. And I just felt like a beer.
Oh, no. I am not advocating for anybody to stop drinking. Do whatever you want. Get as drunk as you want. I'm just taking a little break. Just for my own health, but no judgment on anybody or even like a testament against drinking, because like drinking's fun. And as long as you can control yourself, I say go for it.
What a great statement, Steve.
Thank you. I also say that we should go back in time all the way back to the year 2008, specifically to May 4th. You know, when I think of May 4th, I think of a certain franchise that has a lot of movies. So, Craig, what was the number one movie in the box office?
You mean a franchise owned by Disney?
Yeah.
That has a lot of stars in it.
Mm-hmm. And maybe having a man made of metal.
Having a lot of wars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is a war machine in this movie, but not yet. It's, of course, everyone's favorite Gwyneth Paltrow movie, Iron Man. Now, Steve, this is the beginning, of course, of the MCU as we know it. The MCU was once beloved, and now everyone's all kind of meh with it now, right?
Yeah.
Steve, have you actually seen the first Iron Man movie?
I will let you know that I have seen it, and I really liked it. And I even then knew that Iron Man, aka Tony Stark, was kind of a middling character who wasn't super popular. But I thought it was cool that they chose to like make a movie about him. And then something happened where like four movies came out in like 2 years, and it's like, I can't do this anymore. And then I gave up. But I was all in on Iron Man. I thought it was very creative. I thought it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
I still think that the first Iron Man movie might be in my top five of the MCU movies. It's still a solid film. I think it's great. Fun origin story.
Yeah.
You had the fun, shocking ending that like most superhero movies don't do, because you always like the superhero is always about protecting its identity, the secret identity. No one can know that Clark Kent is Superman or Bruce Wayne's Batman or Tobey Maguire is Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And this whole movie, it just ends with like Tony going, I am Iron Man. It's just like a very shocking moment in cinema.
Yeah.
So because the whole time he's also trying to hide who he is. And it's great. It's a great standalone film, but, you know, obviously sets up bigger and Exciting movies that one day you and I will talk about, because I don't think there's ever been two white middle-aged men ever talking about the Marvel movies on a podcast.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, we'll get to them. The internet needs to hear our opinions.
Yeah.
But you'll be happy to know, Steve, you're so like inundated with all the MCU, and there's a movie every day and a TV show you got to watch. But I'll let you know that the only Marvel movie for 2024 is going to be the Deadpool 3.
Oh, wow.
Have you seen the Deadpools 1 and 2?
I see it. I have, and I enjoyed them.
Yeah. So there you go. Someone named Hugh Jackman will be in it. It's going to just be one like big Mint Mobile commercial, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. No, throw in some aviation gin, too.
Well, Steve, we're coming out of the Cineplex. We're hopping in our car from 2008, whatever that was, turning on the Z100 of the day. What was the number one song on the Hot Billboard 100?
Well, Craig, the number one song on the Billboard Hot 100 was Lollipop by Lil Wayne featuring Static Major.
Steve, do you know the song Lollipop by Lil Wayne? It's a pretty naughty song, though. It's about oral sex.
Yeah, I like to play this game at home with my wife when I'm doing notes, and I try and have her guess the number one song and movie from the time of the episode they were watching, and she's pretty good at it. She didn't guess it this time, but when I told her what it was, she's like, oh yeah, that's a big club hit, because before she met me, she liked to go hit the clubs and go dancing, and now she resists quiet life of sewing and making candles.
Yeah. They should, I wonder if there's anyone's ever mixed this song, Lollipop, with, like, Wet Ass Pussy. That'd be, like, a good, like, mix.
I could see that.
Yeah. What's that called? Mashup. That'd be a good mashup song.
Mm-hmm. So let's get to this week's episode, entitled Any Given Sundance, in which Lisa makes a warts and all documentary about life with her family. And though the film is a big success at Sundance, it turns The Simpsons into national hate figures. Oh boy, let's check it out, and we'll take a little break, and we'll be right back. And we're back. Today we're talking about Any Given Sundance, the 18th episode of the 19th season. It originally aired on May 4th, 2008. It is episode 418 in the show's run. Your nerd code is KABF11. It was written by Daniel Chun, directed by Chuck Sheets, and your showrunner is Al Jean.
Alrighty, Daniel Chun. Steve, you know how many episodes that he has written for The Simpsons? As of this time.
How many, Craig?
Six. And we've reviewed four, and then this will be five, and then we have one that we have yet to review, but we did, and no one will ever hear it.
That's right. It's one of our mysterious Lost episodes. Not about the show Lost, but...
Oh, yeah. Let's spoil the ending of Lost, okay? For all our listeners. It was the bear.
Bear did it the whole time.
Yes, Chef. The bear. The funniest show on TV.
Exactly. Hilarious.
The ones that we have reviewed are 16th episode, Jazzy and the Pussycats, G.I. Annoyed Grunt, which was our 126, Rome, Old, and Juliet, that was our 178th, and all the our seventh episode, Treehouse of Horror 20.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, that's probably one. Was that the episode that we were just like so bad?
Yeah, not good.
Oh yeah, Daniel Chun, Steve. He's a comedy writer, written for Office and The Simpsons. You know, I was thinking about our enemies in podcast land. If you, not the other Simpsons podcasters. No, we're friends with them. Respect all the Simpsons podcasts. We're talking about the Office ladies. Those are our mortal enemies. And I thought, they have a podcast recap doing episode by episode. And like, I said, come on, ladies, just talk about the episode. Don't talk about your personal life. No one wants to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
No one wants to hear you go off on a tangent about Star Wars. We would never do that.
Never.
So I thought, Steve,
go like 40 minutes to talking about poo.
Yeah. Steve, I thought it'd be fun to for this podcast and Office fans that we would do a quick little like maybe recap of the episode that was aired the same week as a Simpsons episode. I thought Steve, this episode, you said, aired May 4th, 2008. That would have been a Sunday. The Office aired on Thursdays, so the episode would have been on May 7th. And the episode, Steve, was Season 5, Episode 21, called Cafe Disco. It's the It was the 99th episode in the series. A little synopsis is, feeling the office is overworked after a recent reign of Charles Minor, played by Idris Elba, Michael sets up Cafe Disco in his old Michael Scott Paper Company office. There's also Phyllis injures her back dancing at the disco and bonds with Dwight as he tries to relieve her back. Meanwhile, Jim and Pam plan to elope. Steve, do you remember this episode?
I do.
Yeah. Fun episode, Steve. Randall Einhorn directed it, and Warren Lieberstein and Halstead Sullivan wrote it.
It had a lot of great humor. It was a little cringy at times, but ultimately very funny.
My favorite scene is when Jim looked to the camera and made like a smug face.
Yeah. I liked it when Michael said something awkward and dumb.
And probably problematic now.
Yeah.
Or even problematic then.
A little homophobic.
If you give this a ranking, what would you give this episode a ranking?
Man, I would give this, I'd say it's a solid 4 Dundies out of 5.
I'll give it 3.5.
That's tough, but fair.
All right. Now let's get back to talking about poop.
Exactly.
Hey, I'll tell you the episodes that Dan O'Chan of The Office wrote, since we're on our Office podcast right now. He wrote Murder, The Delivery, Nepotism, Training Day, Doomsday, and Tallahassee. I'm just reading off the wiki, so I'm not going to click on them saying what seasons or, you know, we'll get to those episodes when we do.
Yeah.
Variety, in 2015, named him one of 10 TV scribes to watch in that year.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
All right, Steve. Should we just get into the episode now of The Simpsons?
Yeah. So we start with a couch gag in which a pair of hands open up a pop-up book entitled The Simpsons, and it reveals a 3D pop-up display of America's favorite animated family.
It doesn't look like the Griffins.
It's not the Flintstones.
It's not Family Dog.
It's not Rude Dog of the Dweebs.
It's not the PJs.
All right, so let's get started. Where do we begin, Craig?
We begin, like every episode of The Simpsons does, early morning at Springfield Stadium, where the big game is taking place. It's Springfield U versus Springfield A&M. So the Simpsons arrive in the arena, and Bart wonders why they are there hours before the game begins. Homer offers an explanation.
We're not here for the game. The game is nothing. The game is crap. The game makes me sick. The real reason we Americans put up with sports is for this. Behold, the tailgate party, the pinnacle of human achievement. Since the dawn of parking lots, man has sought to stuff his guts with food and alcohol in anticipation of watching others exercise. What childbirth is to women, eating trunk meat is to the bewanged.
Have you ever been to a tailgate for any sort of event?
I have not, but when I think about tailgating, I know that you're a bit of a sports fan and you like some good food. It seems like something that you'd be into.
We do like to have an occasional drink on this podcast, but I am not an AM drinker.
Yeah.
Tailgating does not appeal to me whatsoever.
Yeah.
I don't want to like stand around drinking beer and then eating like carby, fatty foods, because by the time the game starts, I'm going to be like zonked out.
Yeah. That's what I don't understand is like you're tired by the time everything begins.
It's like, you know, if I start drinking during the day, like, you know, I'm going to want a nap.
Right, right. Exactly.
So,
the idea of day drinking is just exhausting.
It really is. Like, doing anything during the day is exhausting. Like, living. It's just exhausting.
You know, yeah, and doing stuff at night, too, is also very tiring.
Yeah, morning, you don't want to get up.
And nighttime, you're getting ready for bed.
Yeah. I really wish we were those, like, Wall-E humans where we just got to sit in that chair and be fat.
Give it time.
Oh, wait, isn't that what we're doing right now?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. We will tailgate for a Simpsons movie.
That's right.
No, we won't. Steve, do we have tailgaters there that we know?
We do. We have the rich Texan grilling ribs in the trunk of his car.
We got Ken Brockman and Artie Pie grilling steaks on top of their Channel 6 news van.
And we have Rainier Wolfcastle converting his Hummer into a full cooking station, complete with a deep fryer, a rotisserie, and an A&M sucks hood.
Well, Homer holds up one tiny banner that says tailgating, and the second says is fun. God, we're in a season. I feel like we've passed the tiny banner seasons. You know, this is post movie, right? But this is kind of like a fun callback. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. And, well, he's asking what could be more fun than eating and drinking for hours in a drizzly parking lot. Lisa sarcastically responds with anything. And Bart says that everything is better. This is such great kid logic because this is how I would be if I was them.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was never like that kind of person either. So, yeah, I'm glad.
Yeah, me too.
So, as they debate about everything or anything being better than tailgating, we see Snake Jailbird enjoying a burger in the driver's seat of the cop car. It's a Wiggum's cop car, and he's barbecuing in the back when Ralph proudly shows him a Ralph Witch, which is just Ralph's hand in a bun, and Ralph takes a bite, then complains that it tastes hurty. And then, in a really good, like just annoyance that Clancy just tells his son that his hand isn't food. It's like he's a fan, like almost breaking the fourth wall in a way, like as a fan of of The Simpsons. Like, we're kind of at this point, maybe like sometimes Ralph is too much now. And even for his own, for Wiggum's, he's like, oh, God, Ralph, we get it. You're dumb. But yeah, so Ralph starts crying. And then, of course, Wiggum apologizes, saying that it is food and everything is what Ralph says it is.
Yeah, it's the first of several kind of meta jokes that they do in this episode that we'll get to. But yeah, it is funny.
But you feel the same way, though, right? Like, Ralph was such a great, like, maybe every sixth episode back in the day, there'd be, like, a funny Ralph line that would just sustain that character mm-hmm. for, like, a couple years. You only need, like, one or two appearances of him. But then it's just like, all right, every episode, gotta throw in something Ralph says that's so silly.
Mm-hmm. He's dumb. We get it. So Homer takes a cooler from the back of his car, saying that he brought everything they need. Bart examines the cooler and finds that there's only forks and plates and no food. Homer tells his son that the food is all around them. Bart is stunned to learn that his father brought them there to beg. But as Homer explains, when it's people you know you're begging from, it's called mooching. He then approaches Hans Moleman, who is grilling steaks in his finest cereal griller apron. Homer gives him a big hug, squeezing Hans Moleman into his bosom, giving Bart ample opportunity to steal Mr. Moleman's meats. Once these steaks have been pilfered, Homer leaves Hans grasping for air. Over at another portion of the parking lot, Sideshow Mel and Carl argue over the value of their respective colleges. Meanwhile, Marge offers some activities to keep Lisa occupied.
Springfield, you sucks!
A&M cheerleaders are clumsy!
Your superstar professors treat undergrads like an afterthought!
Your tenure track is heavily politicized!
Oh, that's it!
Lisa, honey, just because you're a girl doesn't mean you can't join in the fun. Maggie and I are washing the soiled foam fingers.
Well, I guess I could cut loose and do a little homework. I could start working on my school video project. The assignment is to film the beauty of the everyday, so let's see.
Steve, whatever college you went to sucks.
And whatever college you went to also sucks.
It's kind of funny. This is our connection with last week's episode with Springfield University of Camp. So there's our connection. There's another mm-hmm. school.
There you go.
Well, Lisa takes her My Little Sony camcorder and examines the scene around her. She sees foam fingers flaying as they dry on like a clothesline among the sea of drunken, stumbling sports fans. And Carl helps Sideshow Mel, and the two men hug just as a lamppost illuminates them. Hello, lamppost. What you glowing? A beautiful, colorful Mandela, which is just so happens to be the back of a tattoo of a woman in a halter top who is passed out in the parking lot, and Clancy flipping a steak in the air, and Homer leaping to catch it in his mouth, and then a turtle laying flat on his back, rolling to and fro, trying to right itself and get on its feet. Barney Gumble struggles with the same fate as the turtle.
Yes, Lisa sees drama and inspiration everywhere she looks. She spins around and she makes a discovery. She's a born filmmaker. Later, over at Springfield Elementary, Lisa shows her footage to her teacher. He sees a clip of Homer chomping on a burger and sauce is flying everywhere. The teacher comments that there's some real interesting stuff and gives Lisa's film 3 stars out of a possible 5. Lisa laughs nervously, asking if she's in an art class or a comedy class. When she asks why she got 3 stars, her teacher, Mr. Kincaid, tells her that it could be 2 stars. She agrees with your educator's decision, but then goes over his head, visiting Principal Skinner.
The man is an idiot!
Agreed. The film has everything. Emotion, conflict, Milhouse. Lisa, you're a gifted filmmaker. It's as if Ingmar Bergman and Penny Marshall had a baby.
Principal Skinner, I didn't know you knew so much about film.
Cinema is my secret passion. I've even written a screenplay or two on speculation. When Edna met Seymour, Ghost Willie, killing Seymour's mother, the principal who sold the screenplay.
They sound great. I'd love to read them sometime.
Unfortunately, the studios have made it clear they're not interested in my work. In fact, I'm no longer welcome on the Universal Studios tour.
Orlando or Hollywood?
There's one in Hollywood?
Yeah, getting back to my grade.
Forget grades. With the right subject, you could be a great filmmaker. What comes to mind when you think of drama?
Well, according to Aristotle, drama contains six elements. Plot, theme, character.
Not the smarty pants answer. Where's the drama in your life?
Okay, but can I just finish the smarty pants answer?
No, in your life.
My family! Language, rhythm, and spectacle.
Hey, at the beginning, before we play the clip, we had Lisa in the camera. That was kind of like a reference to American Beauty, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Can we watch that movie now? Or is it too hard? Because, you know, Annette Bening's in it.
Oh, I was going to say, is Thora Birch something after her?
It's because of Wes Bentley, Steve.
Yes. I don't know if we can. I don't know if I want to. I don't know if it's actually good. Like, I remember watching it, but I don't know. Is it a good movie? I guess that's what I'm asking.
I just remember watching it and being really excited because Scott Bakula is in it. And it's like, oh, wow, Scott Bakula's in it. In an Academy Award winning movie. So that's all that mattered to me.
Right.
But the reason why we can't watch it anymore is because Scott Bakula, who is a straight white cis male, and he played a gay male in that movie. And you can't have that.
That's the one thing wrong with it.
Mina Savari, I mean, we canceled her, right?
Yeah.
Peter Gallagher, so canceled.
Oh, yeah.
Like, come on. Go bash another watermelon, Peter. Chris Cooper, we're not hanging with that Mr. Cooper anymore.
Yeah.
Allison Janney, go to Kaiser Permanente. It's different from the ground up.
Thrive.
John Cho as Sal House, man number one. You know what you did.
That's right.
Everyone else, you're fine.
Yeah. I like Skinner just calling one of his teachers an idiot.
Yeah, and have we seen Mr. Kincaid before, or I'm not familiar with that teacher.
I don't know that we've seen him before or since, but let me double check that, because I don't think that, I just think he might be a one-off character, but.
All right, well, Steve, that looks that up. Skinner agrees with Lisa that the family is where the drama lies, realizing that Lisa's brother is Bart Simpson's, one of Miss Grabobble's fourth graders, and her father is a local character of note. I just like the idea that, like, he didn't know who Lisa's brother was for a second. He's like, oh, you're Lisa, Bart's brother.
They've been through so much.
Yeah. It's just like a fun, is it like an exposition type of joke, maybe? I don't know. It's good. But he then pulls out a newspaper clipping with the headline, Aquarium to Stop Serving Beer, and it shows Homer punching an octopus while wrapped in its tentacles as it holds a duff.
Yeah, that's the only episode that he appears in is this one.
But he does have a character on Tapped Out. He's got at least four action figures.
Of course, yeah. He was in Simpsons Hit and Run. He has his own line of Kincaid mint Butterfingers, and they're really gross, because who wants mint with their Butterfinger? But that's what they did.
Yeah. His voice is an option on the Waze app when you're driving. Put on the GPS, you know. The Instagram filter with his face. It's all great, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's great. So Seymour tells Lisa if she makes a documentary about her family, he can help. He gives her a key to the AV cage, allowing her access to a slew of film and editing equipment. And Lisa is impressed with Skinner's generosity and asks how she can repay him. All he asks is that if she ever wins an Oscar, he gets it. Lisa hesitantly agrees and walks off, leaving Skinner to open a lighted cabinet where his future award will once sit. He mutters to himself that the cabinet makers all laughed at him, but they'll see. They'll all see.
Hey, there's probably some Simpsons writers, actors, makeup artists that listen to this podcast, right?
I'm sure.
Yeah, they should give us an Emmy Award if they win it.
Yes, they should.
Or an Oscar. Not a Grammy, though.
No, that's not an award. That sucks.
Yeah, so the next morning, Lisa walks into the kitchen with a camera when Marge asks what she's doing, and Lisa tells her mother that she's making a documentary about a very special family. Bart assumes it's Smithers and Burns. But Lisa explains her movie is about The Simpsons, and Homer wants to play Smithers. But Lisa wants him to be himself, Homer Simpson, which he assumes because he's fat. And Marge states that she loves documentaries, especially the one that came with her lawnmower. So she holds up a DVD entitled So You've Bought a Toro, complaining that the film was suspiciously pro-lawnmower. You ever, like, go to, like, a thrift store and you're just, like, perusing through, like, the DVDs or even back in the day, like, the VHSs, and you'd always see, like, instructional videos? Mm-hmm. Like, does the Goodwill Industries really think you're going to buy, like, how to set up my Windows 95?
I mean, it does have, you know, Jennifer Aniston and Matthew Perry, rest in peace, so.
Oh, maybe we're thinking, like, video games. Like, you'll see, like.
Yeah.
Kids don't remember this, but, like, back in the day, kids, when you bought video game systems, you usually got, well, you back in the day, we actually got a game with the system. And then they would give you, like, the demo disc, like PlayStation. And then you just buy a system now with nothing. It's like, what's the deal with that?
And then when you do get a game, it takes 6 hours to load.
Yeah. Like, when you bought the Game Boy or got the Game Boy, it always came with Tetris.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they weren't shitty at that time. They're like, well, yeah, you have the system. Here's your game. You're going to play with it. Because it is kind of chicken shit to, like, say, here's a system and buy a game.
Right.
But now you got to do that.
That's dumb.
I guess it's kind of the nice thing with, like, Game Pass. You're still paying for it, but you have, like, all of a sudden access to hundreds of games, like, right away.
Right.
Which is nice. And a lot, too, with, like, you can stream it right away. Like, he's complaining about, like, downloading it, but, well, no, a lot of them you can just, like, instantly play through streaming.
That's true. Yeah. I also miss game, like, booklets, like, with lore and stuff.
Right. And, like, maps, and sometimes, like, some games you had to have, like, the booklet to come across puzzles, like, mm-hmm. Oh, look at the booklet to help out. Fun times. But now you can just do all that on the internet. I mean, back when I was playing Red Dead 2, I was using, like, a website that had locations to, like, everything, but then I could, like, bookmark, well, I've already visited this loot, so I can cross it off on my map so I don't have to go back there again, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was nice. That still is nice, but. Steve, let's just go back to The Simpsons. Lisa's going to talk in this clip. She offers some natural direction before she begins to film the little documentary.
Okay, everyone, just be yourself. Don't look in the camera, pretend I'm not here, and no toupees.
What? Well, I'm going for a Shia LaBeouf thing. Not quite a nerd, not quite a hunk. Shia LaBeouf!
And let's roll.
Uh-oh, there's already an on-set romance.
Oh, me. She's not making a snuggle film.
Ew, Lisa, make them stop.
I'm sorry, but as a filmmaker, I have to face the truth.
It's a little weird. Marge is lying about saying that her daughter isn't making a snuggle film. It's like, no. My daughter's not making a porno.
Mom, Dad, can I shoot you guys when you're banging?
Hey, if it's doggy style.
Get your money. Yeah, Marge, get your mind out of the gutter. Or is it Steve's mind in the gutter when he's thinking that?
I mean, I think we might both be in the gutter, both Marge and I. Lisa begins to film, showing Marge folding laundry whilst watching TV. As she puts the folded shirt on the pile, Maggie throws it in the air, and it lands back in the hamper, where Marge absentmindedly folds it again. We then see Bart cozy in bed. He gives his teddy bear a sweet little kiss, and then seeing that he's being filmed, he punches the bear repeatedly. Next, we see Maggie playing tug-of-war with Sense's little helper, trying to get a rattle out of the dog's mouth. Snowball 2 grabs Maggie and tries to pull her to help, and that proves successful as Maggie rolls and gets the rattle back. Lisa continues to capture footage in the backyard as Bart pins Homer down with some croquet hoops. He then puts a croquet ball next to his father's head and then hits Homer's head with a mallet, causing the ball to fly in the air, knocking out Ned Flanders, who is tending to his garden next door.
Should we mention this is all while the band Spoon's song I Turn My Camera On is playing?
Oh, yeah. I want to say that every now and then my wife, Laura, will walk in while I'm writing notes for this. And she's like, oh, hey, when's this episode from? I was like, oh, it's from 2008. And then that song she started playing, she's like, yep, that's 2008, all right. So, yeah, that's definitely that's from the time.
So she put her hands on her hip and say, yep, that's 2008, all right, and then waits for a laugh track.
Yeah, then the studio audience went wild.
Yeah, that whole, with the Homer wearing the wig and saying I'm trying to be like Shia LaBeouf. I'm like, wow, that's a name I've not heard in a long time. A long time. Although, no, I think I read that Shia LaBeouf is like a priest now, something like that. Or a minister, or he's the minister's cat. That's what it is. Steve, should we play the minister's cat?
I think so.
Uh-oh, we're going to get old Charles Dickens in here to play with us. Back at Springfield Elementary, Super Nintendo Chalmers steps into Seymour's office, shouting, Skinner! Gary has heard that Seymour has been encouraging the students' creativity. Skinner goes on to explain, but Chalmers states that he's thrilled, or he would be if it weren't for Skinner's knee-jerk assumption that he's so angry, which he is now.
So Chalmers is eager to support Lisa's film, as it is a chance to show up that fancy Springfield Creative Arts Academy. On the other side of town, we see that the Refined Learning Institute, with its artists creating pieces with various media, as an actor performs Hamlet on a makeshift stage. Gary tells Skinner that the whole school is made up of modeling clay that they reshape, seemingly just to get his goat. We then see the brick-and-mortar school collapse and reform into a modern building resembling the Guggenheim. Seymour has big plans for Lisa's film, but Gary has even bigger plans.
Well, with some school band music and added effects, we could show Lisa's film at the public library.
Think bigger, Seymour. Think film festivals.
You mean Banff?
Bamf schmamf. I'm talking about Sundance.
Sundance? The preeminent independent film festival held each January in Park City, Utah?
Yeah, the very same, yes. If Lisa's movie gets in, we won't just be the school with the highest hamster mortality rate. Ah, so young. We'll also have a kid who did a thing.
I thought it'd be fun to talk about Sundance Film Festival real quick, Steve.
All right.
By the time this episode drops on January 18th, 2024... the 2024 film Sundance Film Festival will have started.
Wow.
What coincidence. Yeah. It'll go up until Sunday, January 28th. But the Sundance Film Festival was created in the year 1978 by John Earle and Sterling Van Wagenen, who was the head of the Robert Refers company, Wildwood Enterprises. The films that were showed in the first film festival were Deliverance, A Streetcar Named Desire, Midnight Cowboy, Mean Streets, and Sweet Smell of Success.
Mm-hmm.
Or some of the films, at least. It was to showcase American-made films, highlights the potential of independent films, also increase the visibility for making films in Utah. But it was, yeah, it was there to really just show independent films, you know? Not, you know, the big studio pictures type of thing. It's kind of like a lot of indie films starting there, really.
And the kind of concept of indie films in general, because before that, you didn't really have, like, you didn't have your Quentin Tarantinos, your Kevin Smiths, your Spike Lees. So there wasn't, like, an outlet for, you know, independent films. So this is kind of the first American way for independent films to get notoriety.
Yeah. But now, Steve, it's just like Burning Man, you know?
Yeah. Just rich hippies doing drugs and getting naked.
There goes Robert Redford streaking across the stage. That'd be fun to go to Sundance, though, but, you know, we have to bring a movie. What movie should we bring?
Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
I'll bring Ghostbusters 2, nice. The New Batch. So Lisa, Skinner, and Chalmers visit the school band who are adding a score to Lisa's film. Dewey Lario has written a piece entitled Homer's Lament, perfect for the scene in which Homer tries to get a horizontal pickle out of a jar. In the classroom is the Foley stage, in which bullies Jimbo, Dolph, and Kearney attempt to capture the sound of Marge getting ketchup out of a bottle. And they do this by having Kearney punch Martin Prince as Dolph and Jimbo hold him down. And Lisa walks in stunned, but when she learns that they are awesoming up her sound effects, she allows them to proceed. Martin begs that they go to the next scene, which is Marge tenderizing a steak with a large mallet.
Over in a palatial snowy cabin in Park City, Utah, there is a meeting of executives from the Sundance Film Festival, and outside there's a sign saying not to feed Ben Affleck, because he's got that massive hog and, you know, you don't want that thing whipping out. Inside, there's a complaint of movies being too Hollywood.
We're getting too many mainstream movies. When are we going to see a submission with a Sundance independent film spirit?
Paul Giamatti is the world's greatest super spy who only exists in the mind of an overweight agoraphobic jazz musician played by Martin Lawrence in a fat suit. Oh, okay. Here's one from Springfield made by a vegetarian. Intellectual misfit. People, you know you have to limit your gasps at this altitude. Cause, oh, and she's 8 years old.
I like in when they throw the film in the fire, you see a little footage of Paul Giamatti and Martin Lawrence in the fat suit.
Have you watched the Holdovers yet?
You know, I haven't. We were going to watch it because we have a very easy challenge that we're doing where we want to watch 100 movies this year, which I realize is nothing but...
In 100 minutes.
Exactly. But I'm bad at watching movies, so I'm trying to get better at it. So that's on our list, but we just haven't been in the mood yet. Have you seen it?
No, but it is on my list.
Nice.
I did watch Maestro.
How was that?
I think it's too much like... an Oscar bait movie.
That's what it looks like, yeah.
I'm watching it, and the whole time I'm thinking of the R.E.M. song, It's the End of the World, as we know it. And just keep repeating the line of, like, Leonard Bernstein!
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
In my head, I'm like, oh, please play the song somewhere, like, just so they say that line. Like, I know they won't, because this is not an episode of The Simpsons.
Right, right.
This isn't, like, a silly, goofy comedy. And at the end of the movie... It takes place in the 90s, like towards the end of his life. And there's a dude driving a car listening to REM. And the line comes up, Leonard Bernstein. And I just bust up laughing.
Oh,
so
yeah,
hard.
That's hilarious.
Honestly, I felt like I was watching an SNL bit, like an SNL sketch. Like, and everyone's talking like this. And, you know, it's even filmed in the. Old like 4:3 aspect has like we like to call it the Snyder aspect, but now I'm going to call it the Cooper aspect because it is just like Bradley Cooper, like look at me, look how awesome and talented I am.
Right,
that's my review.
That sounds like kind of what I was afraid of. So yeah,
but at least it had that REM. That's all that matters.
The best part of the movie, I'd imagine.
I was so wanted to watch The Holdovers instead.
Yeah. I'm kind of okay with no more biopics.
What about biopics?
Those are fine.
Okay.
But I don't know, like, I don't care about Ferrari or Ford versus Ferrari or a documentary.
I saw the upcoming Jim Gaffigan one with the story of Pop-Tarts.
Well, that's important cultural relevance.
Right.
You gotta have that.
Yeah, I saw one that there's a Bob Marley one coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We could do a whole podcast on biopics, Steve.
Yeah, we could, but do we want to?
But I really don't want to now. I'm waiting, though, like speaking of biopics, I am waiting, though, for the special edition of Lenny, you know, the Dustin Hoffman biopic of Lenny Bruce.
Oh.
Just so they could add the R.E.M. song in there. Lenny Bruce is not afraid.
Yeah. I was hoping that Dustin Hoffman was going to make a movie about Lenny Leonard.
I was a little disappointed when I watched that movie, and I was like, this has nothing to do about with Lenny.
Where's Carl?
Yeah.
So, as the paramedics haul away the dead bodies of the Sundance employees, the remaining man stamps Lisa's film, Capturing the Simpsons, as approved. And now, the name of the movie, Capturing the Simpsons, is a reference to Capturing the Freedmans, a fun documentary that focuses on the investigation of Arnold and Jesse Friedman and their alleged, though I think proven, child molestation.
That sounds like a fun watch.
Yeah, good time.
That subject matter doesn't appeal to me, so I probably won't watch that.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't like that kind of stuff and murder porn.
Nope.
Although I am enjoying... the latest season of Fargo, which, you know, definitely has murder porn in it.
It does. But I think there's like this sense of triumph, at least I think there will be, that kind of makes it feel better.
And I'm finally glad that they have a character like John Hamm's character that finally represents like you and I.
Exactly. You know, yeah.
How we are as men. Yeah.
Right.
So I'm glad I finally get to see myself on screen. No, we're not like John Hamm.
We're more like his son.
Yeah, Steve from Stranger Things. Yeah. That's you.
Yep. But I'm also a 500-year-old man.
I relate to more of the Juno Temple's second husband.
Yeah.
That's more like us, really.
We look like Weezer and we're kind of nebbish. And, yeah, that's not right.
All right, we're not the Fargo podcast, guys. Let's get back to The Simpsons. Steve, so back at 7:42, Evergreen Terrace, Homer mocks the charities begging for money in the mail with witty quips like...
Save the children. Save your breath.
Take a hike, Sierra Club.
Doctors Without Borders? More like Doctors Without Money.
Hey, Greenpeace, you're not getting a piece of my green. All right, Steve, which one would you want on a shirt?
Ooh, I like Save the Children. Save your breath. What about you?
I gotta go with, hey, Greenpeace, you're not getting a piece of my green. I think it just works really well.
It does, yeah.
Well, he looks at a large envelope and says, hey, Robert Redford, a scissor runs through it. Okay, maybe that one.
That was good.
But before he can cut the letter up, Lisa stops it. She opens the mail and discovers that her movie got in. She's going to the Sundance Film Festival. And Homer says to himself, film festival, eh? And then imagines a film fiesta with spools of films dance into the Mexican hat dance song, wearing sombreros, ponchos, and one wearing a bright red skirt. Their celebration is short-lived as Los DVDs arrive on motorcycles, complete with the director's commentary and deleted scenes. The DVDs begin to shoot at the reels of the film, and back in reality, Homer is left alone in the kitchen, laughing to himself, wondering where everyone went. It's nighttime at this point, meaning he imagined the film festival or fiesta for several hours, possibly all day. What do we think of that joke, Steve?
I don't know. It's silly. I feel like it's a little too dumb for Homer. What do you
think? I wonder if that was the point. Like, yeah, like, was it like the writer's like, yeah, this is not that funny. I'm like, yeah, let's show how dumb it was by Homer just staying there all day thinking of it. I'm just wondering at the time in 2008, was this funny? Or now it just seems not funny and kind of... Like, film festival, I get it. Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah,
it's... Canceling it.
I think that's fine. I mean, it basically comes down to him thinking festival sounds like fiesta. It doesn't work for me. I agree.
All right. We've agreed. I won't disagree to that.
All righty. So, after a long, snowy drive, the Simpsons arrive at the Sundance Film Festival, where, as one batter explains, Parker Posey meets Parked Posers. Now, that joke, I enjoy. Lisa can't believe she's a director with a film at Sundance. Homer has his own hopes for the festival.
Maybe I can finally meet Jim Jarmusch and ask him who he is. Hey, that's him! Who are you?
I try to answer that question in my films.
What else?
I can eat a raw onion without crying.
Prove it, Hollywood! Oh. You're crying.
Yeah, but I'm crying about something else.
What?
This is the last time we'll ever be together.
Now, that is writer, director, and producer Jim Jarmusch playing himself. He's created films such as Strangers in Paradise, Coffee and Cigarettes, and Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai. He's also acted as himself in such shows as What We Do in the Shadows, Bored to Death, and an independent film known as SpongeBob SquarePants Sea of Stories. You know, when he's saying he could eat the onion without crying, and he starts crying, he was being truthful there, because if you know how to cut an onion without crying, you don't want to cut the root off, because that's what will make you start crying. So that root is clearly still on that onion, so you can take a bite of that and not cry, because the root is still attached. He was truthful about cry, because he's going to miss Homer.
And also, you got to leave the root on, too, because it makes it easier to cut.
He's not lying there, kids.
That's right. I like the works of Jim Jarmusch. I forget them, though. I like Coffee and Cigarettes. I don't know why, but I saw the film Dead Man a lot in the 90s, and that is one with everyone's favorite, Johnny Depp. It's just a weird, dreamy Western, but it was fun. I think Neil Young did the soundtrack.
I just remember the Bill Murray scene in Coffee and Cigarettes.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. The Tom Waits one, I think I kind of remember.
It's an Iggy Poppin' one.
Yeah. You know, Tom Waits for no one, Steve.
Talking about Tom from MySpace?
He's still our number one fan.
That's right.
I mean, friend.
Never leave my top 8. So Lisa gives her family badges, allowing them access to all the films at the festival. And Marge is excited to check out Regularsville, as it sounds like her kind of place. But she's shocked to see that the film shows, you know, this hairy, hirsute man wearing a brassiere and applying lipstick while looking in the mirror. So she leaves that horrified, and then she checks out Candyland, assuming that The Great Family Game is now a great family movie. But in reality, a skinny, shirtless man prepares his arm for a needle full of heroin as Walk on the Wild Side style music plays. No lawsuits from the Velvet Underground there. Marge thinks she understands now. Every title is the opposite of what it means. And so with this logic, she's sure to love Chernobyl Graveyard. So she goes in, and then she steps out of the theater, simply stating, nope, I did not love it.
So she liked it.
Exactly. But this is, of course, a reference to some of the independent movies that were around this time, all the way back to from 99 up until the early 2000s, that were very bleak, very darkly comic, and very graphic. But they kind of had this veneer of happiness. Some of the examples that I always think of are Welcome to the Dollhouse, Happiness, Dogville, and everyone's favorite feel-good movie, Dancer in the Dark.
I still watch that movie every other week.
Yeah, yeah. It's my Christmas time movie.
Yeah. Although, that does pop up on my Spotify playlist, the soundtrack from mm-hmm. the Selma songs. I'm like, oh yeah, I like these ones.
Yeah, it's a good song.
So clatter, crash, clack, bang. That's fun.
It's fun.
But that was the beginning of the movie. Yeah. We had to watch that in second grade, so. What would you rather watch, that or The Boy in the Striped Pajamas again?
Oh, boy.
Or, third option, drink this Mountain Dew.
Ew, God, that's horrible. So horrific. So tragic. I'll go with The Boy in the Striped Pajamas.
All right. Well, Lisa's excited to be at the premiere of Capturing the Simpsons, and Homer's happy to watch it as well, until he learns it's a documentary. A family enters the theater, and behind them are Skinner and Chalmers, who are stopped by the theater employee checking for passes, and Skinner claims that they are with the Simpsons, but Bart says that he's never seen them before. So the ticket taker places Seymour and Gary on a sled and pushes them down a snowy hill. And they go through a Mormon church and emerge on the other side with several wives. Charmel says that this can't be real, and one of the sister wives informs him that it isn't, and they have crashed and are lying unconscious in a snowbank. I think it's funny because they take that, we would have accepted that if that's how it happened. It just ended with them, with the Mormon wives,
mm-hmm.
and then cut to back into the theater. But I like how the fact, no, it's not real. They're just unconscious and dreaming it. It was good.
Yeah, I like that. That was fun. So back in the theater, we see the logo for Chalmskin Productions, and it's an orb showing the faces of Chalmers and Skinners over a mountaintop. The film begins with Lisa introducing herself and her family. They're then gathered in the living room playing chutes and ladders. Homer rolls a 3 and lands on yet another chute. He freaks out and starts hitting the game board against the wall, asking, why doesn't life ever give me ladders? And Marge complains that they never make it more than one move in the game. Although, Craig, I do have a blunder. I love me some board games, and, when I'm not playing Settlers of Catan or a 3-hour game of Risk or working on my D&D campaign, I like to bust out the chutes and ladders. So I know that chutes and ladders is played with 2 dice, not 1.
Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
I'm trying to recall if I've ever actually played chutes and ladders. I probably did as a kid, but I don't remember how would you do it?
I think it's literally just rolling dice, and you land on either a chute or a ladder. And if you land on a ladder, you get to go up. And if you land on a chute, you have to go down, not that way. And then you try and get on the top, I think. I don't know. I've actually not played it since I was probably 4.
We should go to one of those stores that do tabletop gaming, where you can reserve tables and reserve a table and just play chutes and ladders and Candyland.
I like it. Yeah.
And all the serious gamers just look at us assholes that we are.
I already feel that way if I'm playing Scrabble.
Or Solitaire.
Gonna beat him this time.
Well, the audience quietly comments on what they are watching, with one man saying it's a wonderful film about a horrible prequel, while a woman remarks that they are like the family from hell on acid that's on steroids. Homer and Marge overhear this and share a look. The film goes on to show Bart in the kitchen, taking plates from the cabinet and smashing them on the floor. Smashy, smashy. Homer walks in, calling Bart a stupid kid, asking him, what if he was barefoot? And Bart points out that Homer is, in fact, barefoot. And Homer screams. So he then chokes Bart. Yay, back to Homer choking Bart. Marge sees this and lets out a defeated look before dutifully sweeping up the broken plates. And to top that joke by the camera, Lisa wishes her happy birthday. That's the cherry on top of that Sunday comedy bit.
Yeah, that's great. So the credits begin to roll and the crowd cheers. There are shouts of, Brava, Lisa! Shame on Marge! And death to Maggie. Marge and the rest of the family are shocked. They ask Lisa how they could do this to her, to them, and Lisa swears she didn't mean it like that, and that a lot got changed on the editing floor. Then the credits play, along with a voiceover, that the film was proudly edited by Lisa Simpson.
Like funny. Most films do, right?
Right. When you get to the edited by, they get in there. The family tells Lisa how they feel, but she assures them that no one outside of the film festival will ever even see the movie.
Lisa, your movie exposed our crappy side to the world. I knew you were lame, but I never imagined you were bogus.
Sweetie, I'm usually your number one fan, but call me old-fashioned. I usually don't like movies that humiliate my family in front of the world.
Oh, I was just trying to accurately portray my unique and quirky home life.
Quirky? Quirky is a grandma who gives people the finger. You made us look like monsters!
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 Monsters! Monsters!
Guys, guys, look, it's a documentary. Nobody outside of this festival's ever gonna hear about it.
Lisa Simpson's unflinching, darkly comic family portrait is the can't-miss hit of the festival. Landspeeder, do not Bantha, to your nearest cinema to see Lisa Simpson stab her family in the back with her camera.
Don't you dare post that review!
I'm sorry, you're too late. I have just hit enter, sending the Wi-Fi beams along their way.
Not if I can help it. Come here, beams. Come on. Hey, hey, where are you going? Come. Oh, there's too many!
Comic Book Guy's website that he used in that clip is Ain't I Fat News, which is problematic in these days, but it's a take on the, at the time, popular media website Ain't It Cool News that would report the latest comings and goings. And I don't know, it's funny how, like, there were all those sites back in the day where you get, like, the scoop, but now I feel like we just get it from, like, IGN or, like, once it's out, everybody knows about it, so, like, there aren't, like, the scoop sites anymore.
Yeah, I totally forgot about Ain't It Cool. Is that even around anymore? I mean, I guess I just don't go to it, so.
Right. The only scoop site that I go to is BaskinRobbins.com.
Problematic joke. Because it wasn't funny. That's why.
Ah, okay.
You know, back when you're on, like, Twitter, that's where you kind of got, like, scoops. It's like, here it is, like, post something that's coming out or, you know, something news. Reddit kind of is my scoops place now. That's where I get most of my news.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, you don't need those scoop sites really anymore. The only scoops I like, Steve, are Frito's scoops. Okay, well, Steve, on the streets outside the theater, Woody Allen tells an angry Soon-Yi that he was only thinking of adopting Scarlett Johansson and wondering if that's so wrong. It is. On another bench, Skinner asks Chalmers if they should check out Sundance's alternative cousin, Slam Dance. Chalmers states that he'd rather die. Just then, several movie bigwigs approach them, saying they want to be in the Chalmskin business. Gary tells Seymour to play cool, and surprisingly, he does, asking for 10% of the first dollar gross, full European distribution rights, and access to the most exclusive VIP tent in Sundance.
I like that Skinner is good at negotiating his regular Jack Nicholson from Batman. At the Scary Hobo's Chili Chunks tent, Seymour and Gary fill martini glasses full of chili in their chili track seats. Chalmers compliments Skinner on his ability to make a deal, and Seymour brags that they don't even know that his pockets are full of bottled water and cornbread.
Steve, what's in your pockets right now?
Bottled water and cornbread. No, I don't use bottled water.
Because it's bad for something?
Yeah, I just use loose water, so it's really just wet cornbread.
That doesn't sound that good. The Daily Sundance edition of Variety offers the headline, Sundance Loves Little Backstabber. That sounds like a rapper's name, Little Backstabber. And it features a photo of Lisa as the family walks down the street. People whisper, saying that they're creepy. One woman asks them to say something dysfunctional, while another man wants to get a picture of his kid getting strangled by Homer. Wouldn't you do that, though, like if you saw Homer walking on the street? Do you think families, when they were at, like, Universal, and, like, a father is, like, with his son, and he's like, well, I'm on a picture of Homer, like, the mascot Homer. Like, he's like, can you strangle my boy? Like, is that a thing?
I mean,
or are you allowed to even do that? They probably don't want that.
Probably not, but that is a great photo op. Like, what else are you supposed to do with, like, if you're a kid and you see, like, somebody in the Homer suit? Like, that's the move. Like, I want to go to Universal now and see if I can get Homer to choke me out.
Yeah. Present a pair of shorts and a fork to Bart so he can eat them.
Right.
Have Homer strangle you. Give Marge a vacuum because that's her item.
Maybe
and Lisa a saxophone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Giving the gifts. That'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't allow it. I don't know. I bet if we Googled right now, Steve will Google that. Homer strangling photos ops. Anyway, so Homer declines that he doesn't want to take the photo. So the man yells that they pay his salary, which is funny. Homer never wanted to be famous for being mean. He wanted to be famous for catching Santa Claus, which is a funny out there joke. And in this clip, they go back to the room and Lisa has a revelation.
Let's just go back to the condo. We have to wash the dishes and do the sheets so it's nice for the next people.
I can't believe what I've done. Maybe deep down I always knew how much this film would hurt them. Maybe I'm the monster this movie exposed.
Now what kind of talk is that?
Oh, hi, Mr. Jarmusch.
Lisa, I've been following your family's turmoil closely, and I can relate. My movies, like Stranger Than Paradise and Down by Law, are also about social misfits experiencing the dark side of the American dream. I'm doing it again in my next film, Cheaper by the Dozen 3.
That doesn't sound like your kind of movie.
It will be. Check out the poster.
Ew. So, do you think my family will ever forgive me for making them a laughing stock?
The answer to that is where it always is. In a movie. Let's take a look.
When Lisa goes, you to the Cheaper by the Dozen poster, it's just like Steve Martin in front of 12 tombstones.
It's fun stuff.
But did Steve Martin kill them?
I mean, maybe. He probably hired somebody. And he's like, I want you to kill 9 of my children. And the hitman was like, you know, it's cheaper by the dozen.
But I want to make sure that you do it inside this one building.
Right.
And then, you know, he solves the case with, let's say, Chevy Chase and Hilary Duff. That'd be a good combo?
Yeah, I think so. I can't think of any other thing. Yeah.
I'm thinking of, like, you know, a comedic actor of his time.
Mm-hmm.
A contemporary. And then, like a Disney star, like a young Disney star actress, singer that's, you know, now their 30s.
Sure, yeah.
That's a good combo, right?
And then you could have, like, somebody like Sally Fields do, like, an amazing job, too.
Yeah. Oh, you mean just, like, in one season?
Right, right. But everybody talks about it. It makes you kind of want to watch that season, even though you kind of fell off, but...
What about, like, a fun cameo by, like, an actor everyone loves? You know, is always funny. Always great on, like, Conan O'Brien. Like, the internet loves. Oh, is in, like, a Marvel movie, maybe? Is, like, a Marvel superhero?
Chris Pratt.
So everyone loves Steve.
Oh, right.
Maybe was in Wet Hot American Summer. That's right. Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah, that's right. The director of Cocaine Bear. Herself.
Was she in a Marvel movie?
I think so.
Elizabeth. Well, no, she was Betty Brant in the first, like, Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Jim Jarmusch leads Lisa into the theater to watch Life Blows Chunks. It's a movie I've also rented at the adult section at Blockbuster.
I love Chunks.
Low-hanging fruit on that joke. Yeah. So it's a film by Nelson Muntz. Lisa feels that Nelson couldn't have made a movie by himself, and she then sees that it's a Chalmskin production. Now behind Lisa is Skinner and Chalmers. Seymour states that he never puts his eggs in one basket. That's why they call him Two Basket Skinner.
So Nelson's film begins with himself and the house, which is actually a trailer, And then he shows the impound lot that his house gets towed to every night. His mother steps out of the trailer, saying that they have to go to the laundromat so that she can steal herself a new bra. Nelson encourages his mother, saying that she'll be the classiest girl at Classy Girls. He then hitches the trailer to his bike and begins to pedal. A junkyard dog chases after him. And then in theater, Jim Jarmusch comments loudly at the movie, asking, what's that? What's going on? It's like, Lisa's just like, it's a cat. And he's like, no, it's not. Oh, yeah, it is. So the other movie set goers are upset.
I love the Jim Jarmusch is that guy in the theater. It's a great joke, great bit.
Yeah, really funny. So back on screen, Mrs. Muntz pours vodka on her pancakes as Nelson tries to get her to attend a school event.
Mom, there's a school play tonight. It's called Kids Are People Too, and I play a grown-up who doesn't think kids are people too. So, if you want to come...
Can't. I'm organizing my Laramie Bucks. If I want that golf umbrella, I got to get to smoking.
Sometimes I take the long way home, past the happy people's houses. I like to look inside and pretend I have a family like theirs.
Nelson, he should have just said, don't cry for me, I'm already dead. The vodka looks like it's like not vodka, I'm like, it's milk. It's just very white, but it's hard to animate, obviously clear.
Right, but it did look a little weird.
Maybe it's like a flavored vodka, or like, you know, like it's like sediment on the bottom. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's probably like not great vodka anyway. But you know, I was thinking about it. And I know that this has probably been discussed on the internet, but is it possible that Nelson is Barney Gumble's son?
We've seen Nelson's dad multiple times, Steve. He was like the coach of the soccer team. That's Phil Hartman was still alive and he did the voice of Nelson's dad.
Right.
Episode. Then, of course, he has left multiple times and comes back.
If that actually is his real dad. Like,
maybe that's why he left. He found out the truth.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Muntz, she gets around and, you know, she's got her own issues. So, you know, maybe one night she and Barney hooked up and, like, had a little fun. I'm just saying it's possible.
Yeah, it's possible. And I think we've seen that theory before.
Probably. Well, Nelson looks in at the Hibbert family as a good doctor, not that one, reads Charlotte's Web to his family. That night in the trailer, Nelson has a copy of the E.B. White classic and puts it in the hands of his mother, who is very drunk, replacing the empty liquor bottle. Mrs. Muntz falls over, hitting her head on the couch, but never wakes up. Nelson once again puts the book in her hands and pretends to listen to her reading to him. And then, in a parody of the French film 400 Blows, which is also a film parodied from the Blockbuster, the back of Blockbuster, very disappointing, it only got to like 295, Nelson runs on the beach, narrating that he likes to cry at the ocean, because only there do his tears seem small.
The film ends, Steve, and the audience cheers. Letha thanks Jim Jarmusch for teaching her a valuable lesson. Other people have bigger problems than she does. And Mr. Jarmusch agrees with Lisa's point, but he also was teaching her about festival buzz, and much like his movie Coffee and Cigarettes, it's a funny thing. So a man states that he likes Nelson's movie way more than the one by the little girl, because he saw this one today. Lisa notes that Nelson is the hot new thing and then sheepishly comments that her movie will never be seen. And Mr. Jarmusch corrects her, saying that it will be seen on a select flights by Alaska Airlines and its regional partners. Or really just the regional partners. And that's true, because past couple weeks, all of a sudden, like, that movie just floated down onto my yard along with like a door that said Alaska Airlines.
Yeah.
It's weird. Time stamping this. Alaska Airlines door exploded over Portland. And
that's right.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Portland was in the news for a week.
Yeah, hey. And it wasn't for something that we did.
Yeah. I was surprised like they were able to find the door in all the rubble of the destruction of this city that we live in.
Yeah, our city's still burning from 4 years ago when all the riots did all that harm that didn't really happen. Lisa made a great movie. And she should be proud. And now, like the best independent films, Jim Jarmusch has to fade out with a cool dissolve. He does fade away, complaining that it hurts. Lisa walks out of the theater where the Muntzes are getting praise. The Simpsons make peace with no longer being famous, while Skinner and Chalmers find someone who could be their next big star.
Hey, Nelson, say something poor!
Oh, thank God they're not jeering at us anymore.
I know. Kind of miss it.
I know. We'll be in another movie. And this time we'll act really bad.
No more Simpsons movies. One was plenty.
Are you guys still mad at me?
We know you love us, honey. Even though sometimes you show it in a quirky way.
I'm not going to lie to you guys. John C. Reilly would love to be in the Chomskin business.
Well, did you read my script?
Read it? I lived it. I am Ghost Willie. Check this out.
Fantastic. Great. Oh, bravo. You nailed it.
I don't know. He seems a little needy.
Pass. We'll see you on the set.
Yes!
Hey, that actually was John C. Reilly.
Yeah, always fun to see him. I think that, like, the joke about Paul Giamatti starring in a movie, and they're all excited, and then it's like, oh, but it's starring Martin Lawrence. I kind of feel the same way about John C. Reilly. Like, he'll do one film that's, like, really art-housey and, like, interesting, and then he'll do a goofy film. And, you know, that's fine. Do what you want to do.
Well, they always say, do one for the studio, then do one for yourself.
Right.
I think John C. Reilly's also, like, in the, like, on the internet as, like, one of the few actors that, like, everyone likes. Like,
yeah.
He's safe. You know, like your Keanu Reeves or your John C. Reilly's. Everyone loves John C. Reilly.
Yeah. He's great. He's a lot of fun. I really like Marge's joke about a Simpsons movie. It's only one of those. I'm not going to do any more. This is about a year after the movie came out.
I mean, it was hell for the writers. We know that. Because it's, you know, you're not going to make everyone happy. And, we still say that the Simpsons movie is good. So listen to our 100th episode where we do a full audio commentary. Watch along with us.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun doing that.
It was a really good time. And we got drunk.
Yeah. I don't know what we did for our 200th episode. I don't think we did anything spectacular. I think we just did a normal episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we get to episode 300, we should just do it again. Just get together, get drunk and watch. Or take a different drug.
Oh.
I mean, like, be on edibles or high and not drunk and watching the Simpsons movie. It'll probably just be us, like, not talking for 90 minutes.
Yeah, well, either us be, like, not talking at all or just, like, having really big ideas. Like, man, I think that this movie shows how the world's going to end, and I think I'm okay with it, you know?
Or we'd just be, like, giggling a lot.
Yeah.
Probably just hearing us eat because we'll have the munchies. Maybe not that. Maybe just the just the drinking again. We'll think about it. Steve, the credits begin to roll and we see the Chomskin logo yet again, and the camera pans out to show Seymour and Gary at the editing bay celebrating another hit. They toast with champagne, but Skinner breaks Chalmers' glass. Gary asks why he can't be a gentler clinker, which is another movie I saw at The Gentle Clinker. Anyways, that's the episode, Steve. It's over. We did it.
That's great. Let's say we take a break, think about what we just saw, and then we'll finish up our discussion on Any Given Sundance. We'll be right back.
Chomskin.
Alrighty, Craig, we're back. Let's finish our discussion of Any Given Sundance. We'll talk about the things that made us laugh, our most valuable jokester, and we'll find out what we're watching next week. But before we do all that, let's give each other some gifts. So now, Craig, I know that we both talked about not ever going to a tailgate party, saying that tailgates aren't really our scene. However, knowing the dynamic cook that you are, I thought you might appreciate a mobile cooking unit. So I got you a Hummer from Rainier Wolfcastle, his Hummer specifically. With the deep fat fryer, the rotisserie, and the A&M sucks overhead hood, so you can cook to your delight. So no matter where you go, you're a mobile kitchen, and I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Well, that's a fine gift, you know, a nice new car and everything. Or it's used, it's not even new, it's basic. It's like the 2000, probably 8 model, 2007.
Probably.
So, you know, it's older. But my gift is equally as impressive, I think, as your gift. And like you say, I like to cook, or, you know, that's me. So I made you some pancakes, and here's some vodka, so you can put your vodka on the pancakes.
Yeah.
Let me just pour it on there for you. Good, 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 good. There you go. Enjoy.
Mmm. Tastes just like my dad used to make.
Did he just, like, spill his vodka on the pancakes?
Yeah. You know how the first one's really messy and kind of ugly? That's the way they all were. He was just drunk.
That first messy pancake goes straight in my mouth.
Messy Pancake is also the movie that I rented from Blockbuster. Okay, Craig. What from this episode did you like? What made you laugh?
You know, Marge's Simpsons movie joke at the end there. That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed in the beginning when Chief Wiggum is just like, my son's an idiot with, you know, Ralph saying like I made a Ralph witch. Just annoyed by the antics, as we mostly probably were back then, of Ralph. Like, he never be as great as, like, I bet my Wookiee, right? Chalmers and Skinner, I think, were maybe my MVJs in this. Because it shows, like, a competency, even though they were kind of, like, shyster-esque producers. And I think this might have been one of the, not first times, but really early stages of the dynamic of those two characters. I mean, even so now, you know, there's that whole AI channel. I don't know if it's still around, but, you know, a year ago, mm-hmm. we were all talking about that Steam Hams channel on Twitch with the AI-generated stuff, which we don't like AI-generated stuff anymore. And the guest stars, Jim Jarmusch and John C. Reilly. Another great, just like fun little cameos. Also that one guy who was just like, hey, Nelson, say something poor. Made me laugh. And then the opening bit, or when Lisa was doing the film and Bart's breaking the plates and then Homer strangles him in his barefoot and Marge has to like, sweep it up and it's also her birthday. It was just so good. So those are my favorite scenes. How about you?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I do think my MVJs are probably Chalmskin because they're just a lot of fun and I do like their dynamic a whole bunch. And yeah, I think that Lisa is a lot of fun in this episode. I think that Jim Jarmusch is really game and a lot of fun. And I think that Marge had some fun one-liners. But yeah, I think that for me, it's definitely Skinner. Specifically, I like the line about him being old two-basket Skinner. His just general knowledge of film in general, just being so adept at it is cool because, you know, we always kind of see him as kind of a nerdy but bumbling idiot. And so that was a lot of fun. In fact, actually, if I had to say that the one person who is not my MBJ, it would be one Homer J. Simpson.
Who, you not a fan of the homeboy, huh?
Not in this episode. I just feel like he was dumb Homer, and maybe the Homer that we saw was a little bit too dumb.
Now I'm off to win back your love.
I don't know. What were your overall thoughts on this episode?
Well, I could tell you when this episode probably aired, I thought it was probably not that great of an episode. I could just see me being like annoyed by certain elements of it. Sure. But that being said, I still kind of had fun with it. And it was one of those, hey, we got a couple of celebrity guest stars as themselves making that self-defacing jokes. There is a lot of similarities with the episode with Jay Sherman.
Mm-hmm.
When they have the film festival in Springfield. And what episode is that called?
A Star Is Burns.
A Star Is Burns, yeah. So there's a lot of similarities, especially even the end where they're just like kind of copying what Barney did with his film and then making another. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. And even like the lesson, like Lisa just explaining like, oh, other people have it worse than me. That's the lesson. And just kind of like, I felt like maybe they just gave up at the end when writing this episode. So it's a mid-tier episode for me. I'm not going to like turn it away. I'm not going to say it's skip, but I give it a solid in the middle there. If I gave it a ranking, we talked about the Sundance Film Festival that started in 1978, 45 years ago. So out of 1,978, I'll give this episode a 1,322.
All right.
How about you, Steve?
As you mentioned, like when we talk about what we're watching next, we always ask, like, do you remember this episode? And I remember last week I said that I didn't. But then when I watched this episode, I was like, oh, I've totally seen this episode. And I think that when it was on then, I did watch it live from New York. It was Saturday night. But like I didn't like it then, but I did enjoy it more this time around. I thought it was smart for what it was. I think that the plot was fine. It is not a horribly original idea, because it is very reminiscent of another film festival episode, but it did speak to, you know, the modern film festival as we know it. So I think that it's a middling but good episode. So I'm going to say it's a soft watch for me. And also, you know, last week we talked about how the most recent episode was very much from Middle America. And I like how this episode kind of towed that line, because the beginning was all about tailgating and like going to the big game. And then it ended up being about art house films. So that's a nice kind of balance. This year, the Sundance Film Festival has 92 films. So if I had to give this episode a ranking out of 92, I'm going to give this a solid, let's say 69 out of 92.
Nice.
Yes. But that's what we thought. And we want to hear from you. But before we do that, we got to find out what we're watching next week. And to do that, we're going to need that good old Wheel of Random.
Yeah, we do. I got to literally pull it out.
Let's see. Yep.
All right, Steve, I got the wheel.
Let's give it a spin to see which season we're in. Boop.
Season 15.
Season 15. Alrighty. Let's give it another spin to see which episode we're watching. Boop.
Episode 6.
Alrighty, season 15, episode 6. Craig, what do you think the title of the episode is?
Okay, Steve, let me guess here. We'll keep in theme with the Sundance. This was a, you know, parody of the Sundance Film Festival, but I'm gonna parody a movie title because The Simpsons like to do that. Let's go to the year 1989, Steve.
Alrighty.
The winner of the Best Grand Jury Prize for Dramatic was the movie True Love. So I'll say that this episode is called True Lovejoy.
Ooh, I like that. However, the title of the episode is actually Today I Am a Clown.
Oh, I gotta guess that. Well, it's pretty obvious. There's only one clown in Springfield, and that is, of course, Homer Simpson.
That's right.
So Homer Simpson accidentally rear-ends Krusty the Clown on his way to work, and Krusty can't work, so the judge orders Homer to take over for Krusty until he gets better. And he does so because Homer did graduate from clown college. So it's kind of the sequel to when Homer becomes Krusty.
Okay.
And and he hires Lisa to write his comedy bits. Marge is the set's cleanup crew.
Of course.
And Bart does catering. And Mo holds the cue cards.
Okay.
And in a B story, Abe becomes a CIA operative to hunt Osama bin Laden.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're almost spot on in that Krusty the Clown is in it. So after Krusty admits he never had a bar mitzvah, he hires Homer to fill in as guest host on his show during the ceremony. So, you know, you're in the right ballpark, you know.
That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, he did pretty good.
All right.
So we got some guest stars. We got Jackie Mason as Herschel Krestovsky. And, of course, as you would expect, Mr. T makes an appearance.
Mr. T?
Mr. T.
Oh, okay. Yeah, famous Jewish actor Mr. T.
The one who pities fools.
The one who sits on Nancy Reagan's lap and gives her a toy of himself.
Exactly. The one who giggles while going apple picking with Conan O'Brien.
I honestly don't remember this episode.
You know, it's funny because it's December 7th, 2003, and I feel like that's kind of still in the period of time when, like, we still might be watching The Simpsons on the regular, so I'm curious to see this one because I don't really remember it either, so we'll see.
All right, I'm excited.
Yes, and we're excited to hear from you, friends and fans and listeners, so you can always reach out to us on the socials like Instagram or YouTube at 138Simpsons.
Or you could email us at 138Simpsons@gmail.com.
And hey, if you're so kind, go to your favorite podcasting app, leave us 5 stars or the equivalent. But you don't need to write a real review. Just tell us your spec script for your independent film. And hey, while you're there, click on the little microphone and leave us a voicemail. We want your impressions. We want your questions, we want your answers, and we want your tailgating tips.
And don't forget to pick up some merch at tpublic.com/user/annoydgruntboys for some shirts and whatnots.
Alrighty, thank you so much for listening. Tell a friend, tell a foe, tell a famous director. For this week, I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Steve.
And I'm Annoyed Grunt Boy Craig.
And remember, I like to cry at the ocean, because only there are my tears small.
I can eat a raw onion without crying.
No more Simpsons movies. One was plenty.